Psalm 85. There's some discussion about the background of the psalm, about why it was written, when it exactly was written. I lean toward the idea that it was written after the Babylonian captivity, where God had allowed or even sent Nebuchadnezzar to come in, and for 70 years God's people was in captivity. And the psalmist writes to begin with and talks about how good God had been to them. Now in mercy he had set them free from captivity. Let's begin reading in verse 1. Lord, thou hast been favorable unto thy land. Thou hast brought back the captivity of Jacob. Thou hast forgiven the iniquity of thy people. Thou hast covered all their sin. Selah. Think about it. Thou hast taken away all thy wrath. Thou hast turned thyself from the fierceness of thine anger. Then notice what the psalmist says. He's talking about God being good, and God has forgiven them. God has in many ways given mercy. But then he seems to say something to me sounds unusual. Says, turn us, O God, of our salvation, and cause thine anger toward us to cease. Wilt thou be angry with us forever? Wilt thou draw out thine anger to all generations? And here's the verse. Wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? Show us mercy, O Lord, and grant us thy salvation. He is looking in the first few verses about how good God has been and how there has been times that he has forgiven them for their failures and their blunders and their sin. But then he says, beginning in verse 4, we need you to do it again. Turn us, O God, of our salvation. Then in verse 6, wilt thou not revive us again? That's what's on my heart this evening. I want to try to preach on this. Ready for revival. Ready for revival. Lord willing, in a few days we'll have revival. At least we'll have a meeting. And I hope, I pray, I beg God that it'll be real revival in our hearts, our families, our church. If it is, it'll not only make a difference here, it'll make a difference around us, in our families, and our community. And I believe that's what we need. I believe that's what we ought to desire. If this is about the captivity, and I believe it is, it can certainly be applied to it, there's no doubt. God had delivered his people from Babylonian captivity. If you remember in Ezra, Nehemiah also deals with this. And God said, you can go back to the land that's your home. You can go back to the promised land. And most of them didn't even care enough to go back. And those that did go back, most of them went back to rebuild their homes and reestablish their businesses, to go back and to try to make some money or to make their life better. So no doubt about it, even though God had forgiven and God had restored and God said you can go back, most of them didn't, and those that did didn't go back for the right reason. So the psalmist said, even though you have forgiven us and even though you have blessed us, we still need you. We need you to turn us. If you remember, that's what Ezra did. He came in and preached about revival. And this psalm surely seems to be talking about that. They were back at home, but they were in bad shape spiritually. They needed a spiritual awakening. You know what they needed? Revival. And that's what this psalmist is asking God for. They were thinking about comfort, making life easier. They were thinking about pleasure, not just sinful pleasure, but pleasure that, how can I enjoy my life? How can I enjoy the day? What do I desire to do? They were thinking about rebuilding their homes and getting their businesses going again. But very few, very few, very few were begging God for revival. Ezra was, and a few were, but they did not see the need for revival. I ask you a question. Do you see the need for revival? I hope you do. That's what I want to ask us tonight. Are we ready for revival? There's a time here that a lot of good stuff's going on, but not much stuff spiritually was happening. Perhaps that's the day we're living. I thought about it today the best I can figure. We're in the second generation now that has very little idea what revival is. As far as my estimation in this country, I mean, back in the early 70s, mid-70s, early 80s, somewhere along in there, God was moving in this area, and I could say there was a measure of revival. But since then, there's been very little movement of God. That ought to alarm us. That means there are some people being raised, some people alive today, who have never seen real revival. And the only thing they know about it is what they have read, if they have read about it, or what they've heard if they've listened. That ought to alarm us. Two generations of not knowing anything about revival. I say this evening, we need revival. Could it be that God is about to move on us? Could it be that God is about to awaken us? I sure hope so. I ask Him to. I beg Him to. I try to trust Him to. Mel Johnson said this about revival. Revival is God's finger pointed right at me. It's when He says, it's you. I want to talk to you a little bit. I want you to sit down and we're going to have a discussion like He did with Job. And that's what revival is when we finally start listening to what God says. Wesley Duell said, revival is God holding out His arms of love to us and refusing to give up on us. What a blessing that is. If God does have mercy, it'll be because He loves us. And if He does revive us, it'll be like Him saying, will you please come to me and let me help you because I love you. I want to do good for you. So I ask you this evening once again, are we ready for revival? Could I get you to ask yourself some questions? The first question I want us to ask ourselves, am I certain? Well, what in the world do I mean by that? I mean, first, are you certain that you're saved? Verse 1, he starts out, Lord, in other words, he's saying, I can address you as my Lord because you are my Lord. And then verse 4, he says, turn us, O God of our salvation. This was God's people pleading to Him for mercy and for revival, to rekindle that love, that desire, that hunger, that power, that joy, that peace that they had had with Him. And my question this evening is, are you certain that you're saved? If you aren't saved, you don't need revival. You need regeneration. You don't need something fresh from the Lord. You need salvation from the Lord. Revival is for God's people. So I ask you, are you sure that you're one of God's people? Ask yourself first, am I certain? Ask yourself secondly, am I committed? Verse 4 says, turn us, O God. There is in that cry a commitment. There is from that cry, from his heart, something real. He's not just uttering words that mean nothing. He's not just playing a game. He's not doing this because he saw somebody else doing it. From his heart, he is saying, oh God, have mercy on us and turn us, change us. He is saying, Lord, change me. Don't just bless me. You've been blessing me. I ask you to change me. I am committed to the Lord and His will, and I want to put Him first place. I am committed to the work that God might do in me. That's what being ready for revival is. Being committed to what God says. being willing to change if he shows me anything. When God points his finger at me, like Mel Johnson said, I want to be willing to say, I'll listen, Lord. I'll obey. That's what commitment I'm talking about. Tom Palmer said, revival is a supernatural work of God as the Spirit of God uses the Word of God to turn the hearts of the people of God back to God Himself, all to the glory of God. When God uses people to touch people with the Word of God through the Spirit of God, and God gets the glory, that's what revival is. I ask you, are you ready for revival? I hope we'll be ready when it comes. I hope we don't even wait until then. I hope tonight the Lord will awaken in us the need for revival. Every one of us here needs it desperately. Psalm 85 was a psalm where they're crying out for God to revive them and stir them. May that be our cry. May that be our burden. May that be our desire. I ask you first, ask yourself this. Am I certain? Do I know I'm saved? Am I committed? If God talks to me, will I listen? Am I committed to doing what God says? Number three, ask yourself this question. Am I cold? Psalm 85, verse 6 says, wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? The word revive itself has the idea of fresh life, of being stirred up. So I ask you, am I cold? Have I lost my fire? Have I lost my desire? Have I lost the interest in the things of God? I mentioned this Sunday. I'm sorry, I'll have to do it again. Am I more excited about a ball game than the church house? Am I more excited about going to the mall than the church? Am I more interested in watching TV than praying? I'm asking you to ask yourself, as I ask myself the same question, am I cold? The Bible talks about in Romans 12:11, being fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. It literally means to be on fire. Well, I'll tell you what, if there's anything we ought to be on fire about, it ought to be the Lord. If anything ought to excite us, if anything ought to thrill us, if there's anything we ought to put our all into, is serving God and pleasing Him. Am I cold? Christmas Evans said, revival is God bending down to the dying embers of a fire just about to go out and breathing into it until it bursts into flames. I say amen. A flame just about to go out, and if left alone, it will. But God breathes on it and fire erupts again. God can do that. And only He can do that. It is not us that does it. It is Him that does it. Revival doesn't come through a man. Revival comes through the Lord. It is Him that sends it, just like He did when He convicted you about your sin and saved your unworthy soul. And just like when He speaks to you about things nowadays, about whatever it might be, revival comes from Him. It's a gift from heaven. I ask you, are you cold? Are you just sort of satisfied and humdrum and content? And, oh, I ask you this evening, do you realize the need for revival? Ask yourself this question as I ask myself the same thing. Am I callous? Verse 6 again, wilt thou not revive us again, that thy people may rejoice in thee? That thy people may rejoice in thee. Have you become callous? You know what a callous is. If you do any work, it gets rough and hard, and it loses sensitivity. That you used to could feel, you cannot feel. And that can happen spiritually. Where we used to be thrilled about the things of God, and that can be lost. Our salvation, of course not, but our joy of the salvation and our desire for Him and our hunger for Him and our peace, all that can be diminished. All that can be removed, and it needs to be stirred again. Most of God's people nowadays have so little joy. And I include myself. We ought to be thrilled. We ought to be excited. We have lost a sensitivity. Sensitivity as far as the joy of serving Him and being saved and heading to heaven and being able to do God's will in this world. That ought to thrill us. Being sensitive to the sin that might be in our lives or around us. When we become callous, sin doesn't disturb us. Sin doesn't upset us. We can do what we used to could not do and it not bother us. That's what being callous is all about. I ask you, are you callous? Have you gotten to where you just don't feel things like you used to? Well, I'll tell you one thing. We ought to, I said already, be thrilled about the things of God. But we ought to be burdened about the condition of our churches and our own lives. It ought to bother us. It ought to disturb us. It ought to stir us. It ought to burden us. James Buchanan said, revival is the imparting of life to those who are dead and imparting health to those who are dying. Life to the dead and health to the dying. And that's what God can do. Ask yourself these questions. Am I certain? Do I know I'm saved? Am I committed? Do I want God's will? Am I willing to do it when He talks to me? Am I cold? Have I lost my desire and my interest? Am I callous? Do I just not care like I ought to, like I maybe even used to? Number five, am I carnal? Verse 1, thou hast brought back the captivity of Jacob. Why did that verse, why did that phrase even get put in the psalm? Because he had to. God had to deal with their sin. They went into captivity because that's what they deserved. They had been carnal. And now they're back in the land, those that were, the few that were. Most of them, I said, already didn't even care enough, didn't have enough interest to even go back. So they surely were carnal. But those who did return, most of them didn't care about anything but build my house, build my business, help me to be happy, help me to be comfortable, comfortable bed, comfortable house, comfortable life. That's all I'm interested in. And they cared very little about the life for the Lord. And listen, that's carnality. You don't have to be in the depths of sin to be carnal. You don't have to go and get drunk to be carnal. You don't have to be unfaithful to your spouse to be carnal. Carnal means I'm going to live the way I want to. I'm going to do what I want to do. I've been watching a movie. It's a Christian movie, that type of thing, or program. And this fella has gotten saved, and he's learning how to live for the Lord, and it is just very unusual, and it's like he's going around every day, all day, just listening for the Lord to speak to him. And it's like he's not going to make a move unless he hears from the Lord. And he's struggling with being able to hear and know what to do, of course. But I did think about this. That's how it should be. That we're so sensitive to the Lord that we want His will. That what He wants is more important than what I want. Romans 8:7 says the carnal mind is enmity against God. It is against God. And again, it doesn't have to be horrible sin. Anytime we live as we please and make our own decisions and do it the way we want to and more interested in pleasure or comfort or luxury or ease or my life or my will, or my desire, my plan other than His, that's being carnal. We have lost sight of what God's will is in our life. We have lost sight of it. You see, we still have an old nature. You probably forgot that. You probably have gotten such victory over yours, you forgot you ever had one. But I know that's not so. Our old nature will want the things of the world until we leave it behind and go on home. So our old nature is going to be a battle. So I ask you this question. My question is, am I carnal? The same question can be worded in a different way. Who's controlling my life? The Spirit or me? The Lord or me? Am I carnal? Number six, am I critical? We're doing a little test here in case you're missing it. You get questions on a test. And you're graded by how you answer those questions. Well, we're taking a revival test tonight. So far, I ain't doing too good. How are you? Am I critical? Am I the kind that has mostly a negative attitude? Am I irritable more than I should be, and I guess you should never be? Do I see the bad and miss the good? Do I judge others and ignore myself? Am I critical? Do I see the negative and the bad? Do I always see the thing that should be done that isn't? Am I critical? Do I judge others? Do I look at things in a bad light? Am I critical? It shows a lot about our spiritual attitude and spiritual welfare, about how our attitude is of being critical or being positive. Number seven, am I content? Am I satisfied? If we are, we're doomed. Unless God works a divine miracle, and He can, and that's what revival is, when someone or a few someones get to praying about themselves and others, and God begins to move. But I'll tell you one thing, the worst enemy of the Christian is contentment. Being satisfied where we are. I said again, if we are content, if we stay that way, we are doomed. We'll have a few nights of meeting and come back probably worse the next Sunday instead of better. I don't want that. I don't believe the Lord does. I say this is true. Even the Lord can't help somebody that's content where they're at because they don't want anything. Content means I'm satisfied. Leave me alone. Don't bother me. Why do I need to listen? Why do I need to change? I'm okay. That kind of attitude is dangerous. And it'll destroy a church and it'll destroy a Christian. Tom Palmer said, revival is a divine disruption. I pray often, Lord, please interrupt us. We're so busy, we're like ants. You ever gone to the mall or just sit beside a busy road and watch people just fly? And I've tried to view it from God's viewpoint sometimes, and I think, do they even know He's there? And most of them don't. But it's true of our lives. So many times we get so busy with our routine, our business, our houses, our homes, our jobs, our obligation, our recreation, our fun, our people, our friends. I mean, and we get so busy, you wonder where God fits in. And I pray, Lord, interrupt us. Interrupt us. And that's what I'm talking about now. A divine disruption is what Tom Palmer said. Tom Palmer said, revival is time when God intervenes in our affairs and interrupts our activities. It is a time when God makes our comfort zone Christianity very uncomfortable. When He makes our comfort zone Christianity very uncomfortable. I watched the newest, I guess, of Pilgrim's Progress. And one thing that I noticed about Christian, if you know anything about Pilgrim's Progress, he went onto the journey because he was dissatisfied and not content where he was. He kept hearing about a better place and a city where there was no heartache and no burden and a place to get rid of his burden. And he got to where he was discontent. Until we get discontent where we're at, we ought to be there, folks. We ought to be there. If we think what we're experiencing is all that God has, we don't know anything about God. Oh, we are so below average, subpar, and we should not be satisfied. Then lastly, am I certain? Am I committed? Am I cold? Am I callous? Am I carnal? Am I critical? Am I content? Number eight, am I concerned? Verse 8, I will hear what God, the Lord, will speak. He says, Lord, help us, and I'll listen when you do. Are you concerned? I don't know how you did with our test tonight about being ready for revival. But if you didn't do too good, I want to ask you this one question. Does it bother you? Are you concerned? concerned about your condition? Are you concerned about the condition of our churches today? Are you concerned about lost people going to hell? Are you concerned about people around you burdened and troubled? Are you concerned about what's going on in our world? If we aren't concerned, we're not going to see much from God. But if God will stir our hearts and make us discontent and burden us, you see, more than just discontentment, but a concern. D.M. Hatton said, revival is the inrush of spirit into a body that threatens to become a corpse. The inrush of the spirit into a body that threatens to become a corpse. Adrian Rogers said, God has always sent revival in the darkest days. I agree with that. God sends revival at the darkest time. I don't know how it could be much darker than it is right now. And it's a time when we need revival, ought to pray for revival, expect revival, listen to God. Andrew G. said, God's time for revival is the very darkest hour. When everything seems hopeless, it is always the Lord's way to go to the very worst cases to manifest His glory. I know a lot of churches. I know a lot of preachers. I know a lot of Christians. I know nobody that doesn't need revival. Do I know some that show forth an excitement that others don't? Yeah. Do I know some doing more than others? Sure. But I know no one, including me, including us, that does not need revival. I want to ask you, are you ready for it? If it started tomorrow night, would you be ready for it? How about this? If it started right now, if God starts speaking to you right now, are you going to listen? There's no telling what God might do. I've said that so many times in the however many years I've been here. You may get weary of it, but you know why I say it? Because it's true. There's no telling what God might do for us and for you. I know this, I need revival. I long for revival. It's not just something I desire, I need it. I need it. And I think we all do. Let's stand together.